As they neared the barn, Cora Laudermilk walked hurriedly out to meet them. Her mother toddled behind on her cane. It had been Huey's observation that old Lady Faversham could move along pretty well when it suited her. It just didn't suit her often.
Oh, my goodness, Spring. Are you all right? My heavens, what a fright you gave us.
Cora felt twice for herself to be satisfied that there were no broken bones.
Are you certain you haven't broken anything?
Old Lady Faversham shook her cane at Huey.
I could have told you, young lady. Go riding with a crazy one like that, and there ain't no telling what kind of jackpot he'll get you into. They're a wild and uncaring lot, them cowboys. I ought to know. I've had a daughter married to one for 30 years.
Now, Mother, Alvin ain't all that bad.
Huey helped Miss Renfro down. He took special care to keep his eyes away from her legs, since the other two women were there to seize upon anything he did, and perhaps things he didn't do. Spring Renfro came immediately to Huey's defense.
It wasn't Mr. Calloway's fault. He tried to talk me out of going, but I wanted to see even the boys. Under the circumstances, I thought he did a masterful job of handling the team.
He could have killed you!
But he didn't. He saved me.
Huey nodded agreement with all she said, though he didn't really believe it all. It was luck that saved her, and he knew it. He had had about as much control over that wagon as a matchbox tied behind a freight train. But he took it kindly that she had tried to bail him out of trouble with the womenfolk. He cautiously eyed Cora and thought perhaps she was beginning to lean his way. As for the old lady, he didn't even look at her.
Land's sake, Spring, you are a sight. We've got to get you into the house and see what we can do about you.
Cora glanced at Huey.
As for you, Huey Calloway, you'd better get yourself some needle and thread and do something about your modesty. Haven't you seen the rip in those breeches?
He hadn't. He blushed, thinking how Miss Renfro had seen him that way all the long walk home. It was not a thing a modest young lady would mention, nor for that matter should an old married woman.
I'd like to try again, Mr. Calloway, after we've both had a chance to clean up. But I think we better ride horses this time.
I'll catch up Biscuit in the paint.
Huey had had a bath the day before, it being Saturday, but that was of no help now. He had to do it all over again. As clean as tank water could make him, he pulled on a clean suit, a long cotton underwear, and a clean pair of ducking breeches. Barefoot, he picked his way carefully through patches of sharp goat head stickers back to the shed he counted as home. He seated himself on the edge of his steel cot and went to exploring for thorns. A shadow fell across the open doorway. Alvin stood looking at him.
Find anything broken off?
Well, far as I can tell, everything's here that belongs here.
Huey's shredded shirt lay on the rough pine floor where he'd dropped it. Alvin picked it up and shook his head.
I hope this wasn't your last.
I got one more.
The casualty had been one of the two he bought from Pearson Phelps's store. It didn't seem any too hardy to have cost 6 bits. Fortunately, its mate was still intact. Alvin lifted a saddle rack. That surprised Huey, for it was the first time he'd noticed it was hinged rather than nailed solidly to the rough pine boxing of the wall. Beneath the rack's single leg was a small trapdoor that had escaped Huey's notice. Julio had done what little sweeping had been accomplished. From a tin box nailed beneath the door, Alvin drew out a bottle 2/3 full of whiskey.
This here'll heal your bruises from the inside out.
Huey took a long drink and handed the bottle to Alvin.
I never did like to watch a man drink alone. Does injury to his moral fiber.
He took a long drink himself. He sat there then, the bottle in one hand and the cork in the other, as if undecided whether to bring the two together. He stared at Huey.
You know, for a man with just one good shirt to his name, you're about as rich a man as I know.
I wished I knew how you figure that.
Well, you got one treasure the rest of us can never have. Freedom. And the day the notion strikes you, you can saddle old Biscuit and just ride away. You can go any place you want to. You don't have to ask anybody. Don't have to lay awake worrying that you shirked your responsibilities, because you don't have any. Yeah, there's times I envy you.
You? With this ranch? And that good house yonder and enough horses and mules to outfit Lee's army? You envy me?
Well, just at times, mind you. Times when I'd give my right arm to be you. Just my right arm, nothing else, though. I wouldn't give up this ranch. I wouldn't give up Cora. I just let the thought run through my mind when the pressure gets heavy. I let it pleasure me a little while. Hey, like a man, I guess, who wouldn't really dally with some woman that's not his wife, but he gets pleasure out of thinking about it anyway. Sort of eases the load on these old shoulders, knowing there's somebody with that kind of freedom. I never can be like you, because I couldn't bring myself to pay the price. But makes my load lighter, knowing you're out there someplace. It's like watching an eagle fly high and free. I'll never fly, but at least I can watch the eagle.
What's that got to do with a tore-up shirt?
Alvin stared at the floor.
My eyesight ain't as good as it was in my prime. I've been thinking about getting me some eyeglasses. But, I can still see when something is shoved up under my nose. And I seen the way you and that school teacher looked at one another. Now, Cora knows without me saying a word. I reckon her eyesight ain't too impaired by age. First thing you know, them women will be working up plans for you, Huey.
I've always made my own plans.
And that's one thing I've always admired about you, too. But when a bunch of women gets their heads together, you better sleep with one eye open, sonny. Because pretty soon they're setting up this thing and that thing and the other thing for you. And they'll make you think it was your own idea, too. You're caught like a coyote in a number three trap.
I've never been trapped in my life.
Well, maybe nobody's ever made a brass plate a double rectified effort. Now, I don't have any notion of trying to tell you what to do, but whatever you do, you be damn sure it's your own idea and not something somebody's put off on you.
Biscuit hadn't worked much since they'd been at the Laudermilk place, a fact that helped offset the indignities to which the menagerie-like atmosphere subjected him. He'd established a rapport of sorts with Spring Renfro's paint, though he clearly considered himself the superior. It took some attention on Huey's part to ride along side by side with the teacher. Biscuit wanted to pull ahead to the position that befitted his rank.
I hope you're making this trip because you want to, and not simply for me. It occurs to me that you may not be feeling well after that dragon you took.
Huey knew he felt better now than he would feel tomorrow after the soreness had time to work to the bone.
Yeah, I've been wanting to see the boys.
I can understand why. They idolize you.
Yeah, I suppose one of them does.
Tommy's always talked about you in school. He thinks you're without doubt the greatest cowboy who ever lived.
As long as he believed his uncle's stories, he would probably continue to think that way. But give him a couple more years, and he might turn out like Cotton.
How about Cotton? Does he ever say much?
Cotton's mind is on other things a long way from home. He's looking to far horizons.
I thought I'd ridden all there was, but he's looking past any I've ever been to. I suppose I'm too old to understand him.
You should understand him better than anyone. People say you've always had a way of looking at the distant hills.
Yeah, but when I got there, I always felt like I knew where I was.
When Cotton reaches his, he'll know where he is, too. He's of another generation, Mr. Calloway. More than that, he's of another century. You can't hold him back any more than his parents can. Of all people, you should know that and understand.
I understand him looking away. I wished I understood what he's looking at.
You don't have to. The main thing is that you understand him and help him. He needs help.
Well, he don't act like it.
He has gone as far as this school can take him. I've taught him all I have to give. He has to be set free now, or he'll be tied to this place or another like it all his life.
Ain't any use talking about it. Eve ain't gonna let him go.
She should. Perhaps you can help her see that, if you will. Tommy could stay here all his life and be happy, I think. But Cotton has places to go. I hope you find a way to help him.
Huey stared at her until she looked away self-consciously.
You're something different yourself, Miss Renfro. Not many women around here, or men folks either, understand how it is with a boy like Cotton, or with an old fiddlefoot like me. Most people are always trying to change us into what they are instead of letting us be what we are.
I knew a man once. He was very much like you. He was always looking to the distant hills. When he heard of gold in the Klondike, he made the big run. He didn't find any gold, but it might have ruined things for him if he had. It was the search that always interested him, not the finding. He came back without a dollar to his name, but he was rich with experience, I suppose.
She fell silent.
This feller, were y'all kin?
We were going to be, but he hadn't been home long before the war started in Cuba. He had to go, and I had to let him.
He didn't come back.
A friend sent me a picture of his grave with a little white cross on it. I carried the picture with me for a long time. I finally decided that was bad for me, so I put it away.
Did he look anything like me?
She looked at him a moment.
No.
Huey felt relieved. For a minute he had had the uncomfortable feeling she looked upon him as a substitute for someone else. Never in his life had he wanted to be anyone other than Huey Calloway.
I guess you know now why I was interested in your having been in Cuba. Tommy has told me about you at San Juan Hill.
The boy gets a little enthusiastic, me being his uncle and all. He gets his facts mixed up.
I'd like you to tell me the facts sometime.
It's not a thing I enjoy talking about.
She nodded gravely.
I can understand. But if you ever do feel like telling me, I'll always feel like listening.
The first thing he noticed was the black horse standing where the wire gate was supposed to be, providing an opening in the barbed wire fence that separated Alvin Laudermilk's land from Walter Calloway's. He could see that it was an old horse, standing with head down. It was saddled.
That's poor Rasmussen's. But where's the old man at?
Spring's lips were tight. She pointed.
There, on the ground.
Huey saw a form stretched out in the green grass. His nerves tingled with alarm.
You better stay back.
Huey touched spurs lightly to Biscuit's sides and moved ahead in a long trot. The breeze tugged at the old man's ragged clothing, fluttering it as if he were a rag doll casually dropped by some careless child's hand. Even as Huey stepped down, before he touched the old man, he sensed Boy Rasmussen was dead. The drifter lay on his face. Huey hesitated a moment. Then he gently turned the body over. Rasmussen had not been dead long. Against Huey's advice, Spring rode up close. She looked down with eyes wide and anxious.
Did somebody...
No. Nobody killed him. He just wore himself out.
The wire gate lay twisted on the ground where Rasmussen had dropped it.
Heart seizure, I reckon. He probably got down to open the gate, but never lived to go through it.
It's an awful thing to die all alone.
Well, he'd lived alone most of his life. I'd expect he'd have wanted to die traveling.
Where do you think he was going?
Dodge City, Cheyenne, Laredo, who knows? He probably didn't know either.
Unbidden, unexpected, a tear rolled down his cheek.
He must have been an old friend of yours.
Huey stared down at the peaceful face.
I never seen him more than two or three times, but I feel like I knew him all my life.
He knelt a while, staring. Finally, he pushed to his feet, rubbed a hand over his face as if it itched, surreptitiously running a finger across his eyes to wipe them dry, hoping Spring Renfro hadn't seen.
Miss Renfro, you'd best go on up to Walter's house and tell him. He'll need to fetch a wagon. I'll stay here and watch it. Nothing bothers the old man.
That's the proper thing.
Spring rode carefully around the body, the paint horse shying a little. Then she went through the gate and struck a long trot down the dim wagon road. The old black horse stood patiently a dozen steps away, the patched old leather reins dragging on the ground. Huey walked carefully toward the animal.
Easy now, fella. Time for you to get a nice long rest. Easy now, boy.
Sometimes a horse used to just one man was shy and distrustful of strangers. But the old black seemed to welcome him as a friend. Huey put his arms around the shaggy neck and patted him.
I'm sorry about your old friend there, fella. I'll bet he was good to you.
The horse nuzzled Huey a little and thus spoke its own feelings. Huey uncinched the saddle and let it slip to the ground, relieving the black of its weight and the binding of the girth. He noted the Minia Cheyenne signature stamped into the leather. The saddle was at least 30 years old, its cantle of the once popular Cheyenne roll style already old-fashioned in Huey's childhood.
I'd turn you loose over in Walter's pasture, old feller, but you might not find water. You'd better stay here a while with me and boy.
Huey had no fear the old horse would run away, so he didn't tie him. He went back and sat down cross-legged by the still figure. He studied the face, wondering where the old man was now. He wondered if he was still an old man, or if in that unseen, mysterious new life to which he had gone, he was a young man again. Huey never spent enough time in churches to know much about conventional preachment, though he had no doubt whatever of an afterlife. His father and other good people assured him there was one. He had only the vaguest notion of what kind of life it would be. To Huey, heaven ideally should have something of the familiar for each person. There would be sunshine, but only pleasantly warm, never oppressively hot. There would be rain, but only when a man could sit in the comfort of the bunkhouse and watch it through the open door while he sipped his black coffee and smoked his cigarettes. All would be familiar in heaven, and all would be friendly, if he could have it made up to order.
I reckon you know by now what it's like, boy. I wish there was some way you could tell me.
Huey stared into the quiet, composed old face. It occurred to him that he saw none of the haunted look, none of the anxiety he saw that night at Walter's. He saw only peace. He thought on that a while, and Huey decided the old man probably had told him. After a long time, he heard the rattle of trace chains. Huey pushed to his feet and turned to meet the wagon. Walter and Eve sat on the seat. Spring and the two boys followed on horseback. All were solemn as they pulled up. Walter stepped stiffly to the ground, took off his hat, and looked at Boy Rasmussen in silence. Following his example, the boys self-consciously did likewise. Walter then looked at Huey.
You sure there wasn't no accident? He wasn't dragged or anything?
Nothing like that. The Lord just called him and he went home.
Knowing the life he led, I'd hate to think of the reception he's getting.
Huey lifted the old hat he had used to cover the features.
Eve, just look at that face. They're treating him gentle.
He's a merciful Lord.
She turned and pointed with her chin at the wagon bed.
I brought a quilt to wrap him with.
Huey stepped up to fetch it. It was a new quilt, never used. She spent many a quiet winter's night piecing it together on a quilting frame. Huey took a quick glance at his sister-in-law, then looked away so she wouldn't see the tears come back into his eyes. She might have spoken harshly about Boy Rasmussen when he was living, but at his death, she gave him the best she had.
This is good of you, Eve.
He was one of God's children. It's for heaven to judge him, not me.
Huey spread the blanket in the wagon. Carefully, Huey and Walter lifted Boy into the wagon bed, then folded the blanket over him.
We'd best take him into town. You'll need to go with me, Huey, since you're the one who found him.
Huey nodded. The sheriff would want to know the circumstances. Walter turned to Cotton and Tommy. Both boys had watched with solemn eyes and had not intruded upon the occasion with talk.
You button see Miss Renfro back to the Laudermilks, then go on home and take care of the chores. Your mom and me, we'll spend the night in town. We'll probably put up at the wagon yard. We'll see to everything that needs to be done for the old man, and we'll be home by at least tomorrow evening.
Tommy had seen little of death. He gave his uncle a cautious glance.
You reckon it hurt him much to die, Uncle Huey? Do you reckon it scared him?
Huey saw that Cotton was waiting to hear the answer, though he had too much reserve to have asked the question. Huey gave his response a long and careful study.
Well, for a moment, maybe. We're all a little scared at something new. But then, judging by his face, the pain was gone and the scare, too. Death comes to all of us sometime. Old boy done a lot of riding the last few years, trying to find a place that was really home to him. Well, Tommy, he's home now.
That satisfied Tommy. Cotton looked once more at the quilt-covered form in the wagon, then turned his horse away.
Hit up!
The wagon moved off. Huey was about to fall in behind it when Spring Renfro rode up beside him. Her eyes glistened. She reached out and took his hand, holding it for a moment.
You're a good man, Huey Calloway. Don't ever let anyone tell you otherwise.
Because Upton City and its surrounding trade territory were sparsely populated, the nearest thing the town had to an undertaker was Barber Orville Mulkey. In his small back room, the shades rolled down, he looked over the body by lamplight with Sheriff Wes Wheeler to certify that there were no marks of violence, bearing friendly witness to Huey's testimony.
I'll touch up his hair and his beard, but it'd be a shame to shave him clean. St. Peter wouldn't recognize him.
Just make him look as good as you can.
Wheeler turned to Huey and Walter.
You're real sure you don't know the names of his kin?
I don't remember that I ever taken the trouble to ask him. I just know that he's got a brother somewhere down on the Rio Grande and a sister up on the plains. I'd have taken more interest in him than that. I just never thought about him dying at my gate.
Well, nothing to do then but to bury him here. I'll write a letter to officers in that part of the country to see if they can notify any of his relations.
Seems a shame for a man to be buried so far away from all kin.
That don't matter where they're buried. They'll all find each other by and by.
Yeah, I'm afraid I've got a practical question for the here and now. Who pays for this?
Yeah, the county will. There's nobody else to do it.
And declare him a pauper? No, sir. His friends will bury him.
He didn't have any friends to speak of.
I'll get up a collection. We'll see how many friends an old cowboy's got.
Wes Wheeler was not the kind of man who smiled much. He came close to smiling with his eyes. Huey turned to the barber.
Orville, you just go ahead and fix him up. Put some good clothes on him, too. I'll see to the pay.
Huey glanced at his brother.
You coming with me, Walter?
Walter nodded.
I'm liable to take you to a place that Eve won't approve of.
You think I'd let you go into such a place all by yourself?
They stepped out onto the street. Huey could see a dozen or so horses tied in the vicinity of the Dutchman's saloon.
That'll likely be as far as we need to go. I'll do the talking, you just back me up.
They walked along the dirt street, found an opening between the tied horses, and strode up onto the narrow porch. Huey paused in the open doorway. Walter had been a step behind him, looking back, as if wondering whether Eve would see. She wouldn't. She was visiting with church friends who weren't going to let her sleep in the wagon yard tonight. Huey rough-counted a dozen cowboys, most of them 2C's hands, who had delivered a string of Tarpley steers to a trail outfit earlier in the day. Even C.C. Tarpley wasn't insensitive enough to send them home without giving them a chance to partake in a drop or two of kindness. Anyway, the broker they were, the harder they worked. The faces were mostly young, in their low to mid-20s. Many a young fella gloried in the cowboy profession a few years, but eventually gave it up for something that paid better and involved less physical stress and risk. The man who stayed in it past the age of 30 was likely to remain in the cattle business one way or another the rest of his life, on its fringes if not in the middle. Huey stepped up to the bar where the bartender Schneider waited.
Howdy, Dutch. How about a drink for Walter and me?
Huey plunked a silver dollar on the walnut bar. He downed the drink in one long swallow, then turned to survey the cluster of cowboys playing cards and shooting billiards.
Fellers, I wished you'd all stop and listen to me for a minute.
The conversations trailed down and finally stopped as the men turned to look at him.
Fellers, me and Walter here. We just brought an old-timey cowboy to town. He was old boy Rasmussen. Now, some of you knowed him and some of you didn't. Whether you knowed him or not, you all know the breed. He was following the mossy horns up the trail when most of us was still following our mothers around the kitchen. It was him and his kind that beat out the trails and shot at the Yankees and fought off the Indians. It was them old fellers that taken a whipping so me and you could have the easy way of life we're living today. Now, I figure we owe an old man like that something better than a pauper's grave. I think I know most of you fellers, and I think you'll agree with me. I got $10 in my pocket. It all goes into my hat to help bury old boy in the style he's rightfully got coming to him. Walter, how much you got?
$5.
That's 15. We gotta start someplace.
Huey took off his hat and put his $10 into it. Walter put in his $5. Now, he couldn't afford to sleep in the wagon yard tonight, even if he wanted to. Huey held the hat out at arm's length.
Now, how about you fellers?
The cowboys began drifting up, dropping in whispering money if they were that flush, clinking money if they weren't. Huey kept shaking the hat so the silver would work to the bottom and only the paper would show on top. C.C. Tarpley and son-in-law Fat Gervin chose an inopportune time to enter the saloon. Huey trapped them before they could reach the bar. He ignored the hostility in Fat's eyes and concentrated his first attentions on C.C. He explained the reason for the collection.
Look at that hat, C.C. You don't see nothing in there but folding money. As an old-time trail driver like yourself, I know you'd want to contribute as good as your own cowboys have gone and done.
The gaunt old man's gray mustache wiggled as he seemed to say something, though no sound came out. He tried to cover up the fact that he was touched. Reluctantly, he extracted $10 from a leather wallet that had long been protected from too much sunshine.
Philanthropy will be my undoing.
A pleasant giver is a joy to the angel, C.C. When your time comes, you can hire 100 people to cry at your funeral. But old boy needs our help.
I'll get my $10 back in just a little while on the grub that old chuck line rider won't be eating anymore at my line camps.
C.C. sounded harsh, but Huey knew even tight-twisted C.C. Tarpley never turned a rider away unfed. There was a practical as well as a humanitarian reason for it. These drifters were occasionally a source of cheap short-term labor. Sometimes, moving casually across the country, they would come upon something amiss and report it if they were friendly. On the other side of the coin, a drifter who had been accepted and fed wouldn't set a range of fire out of spite. Huey swung the hat over to Fat Gervin, challenging him with his eyes. With all the men watching, Fat could do no less than equal the contribution his father-in-law had made. Huey saw how much it pained him.
You can make that up in a few days, Fat. Just raise the interest.
Huey carried the hat to the bar and dumped the money carefully, grabbing at a couple of coins and tried to roll away. CC's eyes narrowed.
All folding money, you said.
Folding money's all you saw.
The collection lacked only $7 and some cents from being an even 100. The Dutchman dug into his cash drawer and made up the difference.
Thanks, man. $100 ought to send boy off in style.
You did well, Huey. I think it is due you another drink.
Yeah, I'm broke.
I am not. For you and Walter, one on the house.
To Huey's surprise, Schneider poured one for himself. It was a thing he rarely did. He raised his glass.
To boy Rasmussen.
Huey looked around the room. Some of these men were men he had never seen before, men he probably would never see again. But not one of them was a stranger. He lifted his glass.
To him and all other good old boys.
Brothers and sisters, we gather here today to bid farewell to this man of the plains, a man whose life made better our own. For it was through boy Rasmussen's life and the lives of the many like him that this fierce and beautiful country of ours came to give up its bounty for us and our children.
The bank stayed open, but most of the few other business houses closed for a couple of hours out of respect for boy Rasmussen's funeral. Though nobody in town had known him well, a goodly crowd followed the casket out to the burying grounds. Brother Averill, the preacher, didn't say a word about boy's shortcomings. He spoke only of his contributions to the civilizing of the West, of the hardships he had endured.
Boy has found a new home where the grass is always green, the wind never chafes, and the water tastes everlastingly sweet.
When he was done, everybody filed by the open box for a last look at a link to another time that was rapidly becoming a faded memory, only occasionally revived in pale colors through meandering tales told by old men awaiting their time to go. Finally, Heave's quilt was folded over the old man's face. The lid was nailed down, and boy Rasmussen was lowered into his final resting place, a long way from Doan's Crossing on the Red River. Silently, Eve wept. Huey tied Biscuit behind the wagon and rode away from the cemetery on the wagon seat beside Eve and Walter. They held their silence a long time, Eve clutching her old family Bible. At length, Huey turned to Eve.
I'm glad you was here. I'm glad there was a woman or two here to weep for him.
I wasn't weeping just for him. I wept a little for you, too.
For me?
You'll end up just like him someday. Buried by strangers in some strange place. I only hope there's someone around who'll do for you what you did for Boy Rasmussen.
Well, maybe some good lady will donate me a new quilt.
I'm serious, Huey. I never told you before, but I've prayed for you sometimes. The answer to those prayers is at hand if you'll just open your eyes and see.
See what?
There's a certain fine lady who thinks a lot of you, Huey. She sees possibilities in you, same way I saw possibilities in Walter.
You trying to marry me off?
For your own good. I've been trying to marry you off for 15 years. I don't want you to be lowered into your grave by strangers. I want to see family and loved ones mourn over you. That's the Christian way.
A one-eyed mule could have seen that some type of conspiracy was afoot between Eve Calloway and Cora Laudermilk. Huey had two eyes. Though the two women had been friends for years, they had done most of their visiting in church. Only occasionally had they spent time in each other's homes. Now Eve was over to the Laudermilk place every few days. The two women were everlastingly using a hot curling iron on Spring Renfro's long hair, putting more waves in it than Huey had seen on the troop ship bound for Cuba. Afraid he wouldn't notice for himself, Eve or Cora were always pointing out to him how pretty Spring looked. It was embarrassing to agree out loud, but it would have been more so to have denied it. The two women were continually whipping up something new in the way of clothes for Spring to wear. Huey wondered where the material came from, for Eve had been making her own house dresses from the same bolt of plain cloth for years. Much talk swirled around filling Spring's hope chest. Huey felt a strong notion that hope was higher on the other women's part than on Spring's or on his. He sensed an uneasiness, even an embarrassment in Spring. It was much like his own. At times, he walked in unexpectedly and caught fragments of their conversations. Once he heard Eve assuring Spring that Huey was not lazy, that he did not shrink from honest labor when there was a need for it to be done.
A good woman's love will make a man out of him.
Old Mrs. Faversham was the only one who kept faith with the truth, as she saw that truth.
He's just another cowboy with the itch in both feet. A woman would be a lot better off with a good dog and a hot water bottle, Spring. And you already got the dog. And even Cora, don't you two tell no different. I have never understood why we women always seem to settle for less than we should have.
One Sunday afternoon, pursuant to custom, Huey and Spring rode over to Eve's and Walter's. After the amenities had been met at the front door, Eve looked around for Tommy.
Spring, the sorrel mare had a colt a couple of nights ago. I'm sure you'd like to see it. Tommy, take Miss Renfro out and show her the colt.
Spring Renfro had seen a lot of colts and wasn't all that curious. But Eve made it plain that she intended for her to see this one, too. As soon as the teacher was halfway to the barn, Eve turned to her husband.
Walter, tell him.
Walter gave his wife a sidelong glance of impatience.
Don't rush things, Eve. He would think we're putting pressure on him.
We are putting pressure on him. When the iron's hot, strike it.
Walter gave her that glance again.
I don't see no hot iron.
How much money have you got?
It wasn't a subject he ever let concern him much. He hadn't added it up lately.
Well, if it cost me $100 to go to heaven, I might make it to Fort Worth.
House Barcroft has proved up his place. He'll sell it to you real cheap.
Huey immediately began looking for boogers that he could point out.
How come he wants to get rid of it?
It's a good place. A person could make a good living there.
House never did. He's been hauling freight for Blue Hannigan. If the place would make him a living, he wouldn't be skinning mules.
But he's a bachelor.
If a man can't make a living as a bachelor, he sure can't make one yoked in double harness.
A man with a woman to help and encourage him could do a lot with a place like Barcroft's. He could make a garden out of a desert.
Well, if he was like me, he'd probably make a desert out of a garden. Anyway, I don't have a woman, Eve. I was born a bachelor and I've stayed one for these 30-odd years.
Sometimes I think you're stone deaf to what people are trying to tell you.
Sometimes I wish I could be.
But it's hard when I got two women like you and Cora both trying to make me jump over the broomstick.
You like her, don't you?
Cora? Sure, she's all right.
I'm talking about Spring Renfro, and you damn well know it.
When she let herself use a word of that intensity, she was at the point that a man had better agree with everything she said or find some other place to pass his time.
Look, I like lots of people. That don't mean I want to get married. Anyway, how do you know she does?
That's for you to find out. All you have to do is ask her.
If she wanted to get married to me, she'd let me know.
A woman can't do that.
Why not? She speaks English, and a damn sight better than I do.
It just isn't done that way, at least not by decent, God-fearing women. They let the man do the asking.
Huey remembered that Eve had made it clear enough to Walter when she wanted to get married. If she hadn't exactly asked the question, she had hazed him into a corner and shut all the getaway gates. But he wouldn't point that out to her in her present state of agitation.
Well, even if I was inclined to ask her, it'd be embarrassing to ask and have her say no.
I bet you she wouldn't.
Well, she should. I sure ain't no prize catch.
Why not? You're Walter's brother, and look what I managed to make out of him.
Walter turned and walked off toward the barn.
I'm going to help Spring and Tommy look at the colt.
I'm going inside to get some coffee.
Cotton sat there reading. He only half hid a grin that showed he'd been listening to all of it.
You reading about automobiles again?
I think you could make good use of one yourself, Uncle Huey. It could take you a long way from here between now and dark.
Riding home after an early supper, Huey noticed that Spring Renfro had nothing to say. Whatever thoughts were working behind those studious eyes, she was keeping them to herself.
I hope Eve hasn't embarrassed you as much as she's embarrassed me.
She gave him a faint smile.
She and Cara both. They're about as subtle as a sledgehammer.
He didn't know what subtle meant, but if it had been bad, she wouldn't have said it.
Looks like we've got a problem, me and you.
I suppose we have.
You're a nice lady, Miss Renfro. It's pleased me considerable being around you, riding over here with you and all, but, well, I don't reckon you'd want to get married, would you?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't think you would. That's what I kept telling Eve, but she don't listen to anything she don't want to hear.
Spring turned her head away. He decided she was embarrassed by the whole uncomfortable situation. He knew he was.
If I was a marrying kind of feller, you're sure the one I'd ask, Miss Renfro. If I was that way inclined.
She looked straight ahead, not at him, for a minute or so.
Thank you, Mr. Calloway. There's not anyone I'd rather have ask me if I were so inclined.
The last thing I'd want to do on this earth would be to cause you any more embarrassment. I figure the only way to put a stop to it is, for me to leave. Alvin's got a string of horses ready to deliver over into the Concho country. I'll take them, and after I get to San Angelo, for the good of both of us, I'll just keep riding.
She looked at him then. Tears glistened.
You'd leave?
Well, seems to me like it's the only way out for either one of us.
Huey took her silence as an indication she agreed. He stole a long look at her, riding along with her head turned away a little. He felt a sudden strong desire to put his arms around her, but he knew that as a decent woman, she was sure to resent it.
I almost wished we was that way inclined. We'd make a handsome-looking couple, me and you.
For the next 2 days, Cora Laudermilk saw to it that Huey received biscuits with the bottoms thoroughly burned and steaks with plenty of fat and gristle. Her eyes were cold as a witch's breath. She had little to say, and that little was in clipped words, punctuated by a look that would kill Cotton at 20 paces. Old Lady Faversham, on the contrary, managed a civil word for Huey now and again. Her behavior had shown a definite improvement. Huey saw little of Spring except at mealtime. She always seemed to have things to do elsewhere when he was around. It was just as well, he thought. It had been a narrow escape for both of them. He couldn't drive the horses to San Angelo by himself, and Alvin needed Julio too much to spare him for 6 or 7 days. Huey remembered a promise he'd made to Cotton and Tommy.
If Walter can spare the boys a few days, would you pay them cowboy wages?
Alvin didn't wheedle.
Dollar a day?
Some ranchers would hire a kid for 50 to 75 cents and expect as much work out of him as out of a man. Alvin had always been inclined to smile a lot, but he was smiling even more than usual the last couple of days. He put his big hand on Huey's shoulder, then went to his secret cache beneath the saddle rack. He held up the bottle in toast.
To wise decisions. May that be the only kind we ever make.
Huey accepted the bottle in the spirit in which it was offered.
I hope I made the right one, Alvin. She is a good woman. Sometimes when I'm with her, I get feelings... Well, I get feelings I'm downright ashamed of. I get to thinking things a man don't think about with her kind of woman.
You've always lived a free man, Huey. For the sake of us who got ourselves caged, don't you never let nobody shut the gate on you.
Eve hadn't been to Cora's, nor Cora to Eve's house, so Eve hadn't found out yet that her wedding plans had gone for naught. Huey rode up to the Calloway house late in the evening and said he needed the two boys for a few days' wrangler service.
I don't know. Walter put his plow on Blue Hannigan's freight wagon day before yesterday and went into Midland to get some smithing done. He won't be back till at least tomorrow.
I came by the field. I didn't see no weeds in there that'd take over the cane patch in the week or so these boys would be gone.
I don't know that I can spare them. There's so many chores.
Alvin'll pay both of them full wages. $1 a day apiece. 6 days, $6, 2 boys, $12. You could buy a whole wagon load of groceries with that kind of money.
He had found Eve's weak spot, if she had one. There were never enough dollars around here to stretch over everything that needed covering. It had always been Eve's job to do the stretching, for Walter had never been a much greater money manager than Huey. Huey could see her counting the money in her mind, but she was still hesitant. He didn't give her a chance to turn him down. He stepped outside and hollered for the boys. He'd seen both of them working by the barn.
Cotton! Tommy! Y'all hurry up and get your chores done so your mama won't have to worry about them. Me and you are driving Alvin's horses to San Angelo.
Yeehaw!
Tommy turned back toward the barn in a dead run. Cotton moved up a little closer to Huey, his hands in his pockets. He stared at his uncle with a measure of lingering doubt.
You really mean to take us this time? You ain't just loading us again?
You'll see pretty quick if I'm loading you or not. We go back to Alvin's tonight and leave with the horses at daylight. Now you go do up your chores like I told you. I'll pitch in and chop some wood to be sure your mama has enough to last till your daddy gets home.
Eve stood on the front step, her right hand shading her eyes.
Huey Calloway, I never told you those boys could go.
Huey was not a very good poker player, but he knew when he had a royal flush.
Well, then I reckon it's up to you to tell them they can't.
She could see Cotton working feverishly to feed the stock while Tommy was milking the cow.
If a horse doesn't kill you someday, Huey, I may just do it myself. I'd best get a little supper started so those boys don't ride on an empty stomach.
She turned back into the house. Huey flexed his reluctant hands as he walked to the woodpile, looking for the axe. At the supper table, Cotton queried cautiously, trying not to show too much interest.
You reckon we're liable to see an automobile in San Angelo?
Well, things are mighty up to date in San Angelo. I'll bet you they got, half a dozen automobiles around there by now.
San Angelo's a big place. I've heard it's even wickeder than Midland. That's a long way for two little boys to go away from home.
They're not little boys. Anyway, I went up the trail when I was younger than either one of them.
And look at you now.
It was something akin to rites of manhood for a boy to go off away from home on his first paying job. Cotton had done so before, but Tommy hadn't. His mother hugged him.
You take care now, son, and come home safe.
The boys didn't need long to get their horses saddled, tie their small bedrolls behind the cantles, and wave at their mother as they started up the wagon road. Tears on her cheeks, she yelled after them to turn their eyes away from the evils they might encounter in a godless city like San Angelo, Texas. They had ridden perhaps 50 yards at Huey's side when he drew rein.
You boys just keep on riding. There's one thing I neglected to tell your mother.
Huey turned around and rode back. Eve was watching from the front steps. She moved out into the yard. Huey rode up just close enough for her to hear him and reined up.
They're good boys, Eve, so don't you worry none. They're plenty big enough to find their way back by themselves.
By themselves?
After I deliver the horses, I'm riding on.
Then what about the Barcroft claim? What about Spring Renfro?
Me and her, we talked it over. We decided neither one of us has got a marrying urge. So long, Eve. See you one of these days.
He turned and spurred Biscuit into a lope to catch up with the boys.
Hughie Calloway, you come back here!
She tried to run after him, but she was no match for Biscuit. Hughie didn't look back, and in a little bit, the wind whipped her words away. It was just as well, because she was saying some things she would regret Sunday when she went to church. Cotton looked around as Hughie came up to him and Tommy.
What was she hollering back there?
Just telling you boys to behave yourselves and earn your dollar.
The weather was warm and beautiful. Rains had come at decent intervals all spring so that the grass was good. Tommy's excitement was contagious. It was a bad thing, Hughie thought, that most boys weren't turned loose on their own anymore like they used to be. Some boys these days didn't leave home until they were 15 or 16. They should not be so deprived of the many wonders the world held for them. When Tommy wasn't singing, he was asking questions.
How big is San Angelo?
Well, last time I heard, it was 5,000 or 6,000 people.
That many? That must be near as big as Chicago. I'll bet it's a mile and a half across.
I wouldn't be surprised.
You reckon they got an ice cream parlor? A real ice cream parlor?
I believe I remember seeing one, but I never was in it. It was a few doors up from the Arclight Saloon.
You been in the saloon, though, I suppose.
Well, I had to go in there to see a feller.
Cotton hadn't said much, but he'd done a lot of quiet thinking.
I hope you're right about them having some automobiles.
I wished I knew what gets you buttons all so muzzy over automobiles.
You keep saying they're just a passing fad, and I'd like to see one before they're all gone.
That ain't much to see. When the new wears off and everybody goes back to sensible transportation, I'll bet the price of good horses and mules will go up by $50 or $75 a head.
They cut across country until they struck the head of the Middle Concho. Once they made the river, all they had to do was follow, because it would ultimately lead them to town. The three conchos, Middle, North, and South, all converged at San Angelo and formed one main concho river. It flowed on east to contribute its clear waters to the red muddy run of the Colorado, a little way beyond the Indians' Painted Rocks. It seemed to Hughie there wasn't a foot of this region that he hadn't ridden over at some time or other. Seeing it again was like meeting an old friend after a long separation. He had ridden from the Mexican border to Canada, and he was hard put to say which was his favorite part of the country. Usually, it was the place where he was now, or the place he was on his way to.
Oh, my darling. Oh, my darling.
It was nice to go home, but it was good also to be out moving again, not knowing really where he was going once he got the horses delivered. Free to make up his mind at any time and to change it just as suddenly in the middle of the road without pausing for consultation with anybody. The horses suddenly stopped and bunched up along an unexpected fence. The barbed wire was shiny and new. The horses tentatively moved down it a little way, then up, uncertain which way they were expected to go. Tommy rode out to one side, Cotton to the other, to keep them from taking any wrong notions. When the horses had quieted and seemed disposed to graze the good grass a while, Hughie rode down closer to the river.
Come on, Biscuit.
He found no gate, but he found a drop gap where the barbed wire was tied to the posts with slick wire rather than fastened down securely with steeples. This was a substitute for a gate. Hughie got down and untied the wires from several posts and signaled to Cotton to help him push them down to ground level. This opened a pathway for the Bronx to pass over. When they were all on the other side, Hughie tied the wires back in their proper places and mounted up.
Seems like it ain't been more than a year or two since I was along this very same way. There wasn't no fence here then.
It's sure here now.
Cotton looked at the big cedar posts, more permanent than the mesquite posts he was used to at home.
Looks like they mean for it to stay.
Every time you turn around anymore, you run into a new fence. Seems like somebody is bound and determined to turn this whole world into one big barbed wire jail.
We came a long ways before we ran into this one.
I used to not run into any. Used to ride 1,000 miles and never open a gate unless it was to somebody's yard or his tater and turnip patch.
Not far ahead, somewhere, lay a set of old wooden corrals Huey remembered from years past. They were near the river and would be a good place to hold the horses while they camped for the night. Dusk was closing as he saw a pinpoint of firelight ahead. Disappointment touched him. If someone was already there and using the pens, he and the boys would have to go on a few miles farther to a ranch house he knew about. He hadn't brought hobbles or bridles and picket line because for him this was to be a one-way trip, and there was no handy way of getting them home. They would be too bulky for Cotton and Tommy to carry. Yet they were worth too much to leave or give away. Even Alvin Laudermilk wasn't that generous. Nearing the pens, he saw to his relief that they stood empty. The campfire was down by the river, where a man had a horse staked on a long rope to graze beneath a towering stand of big native pecan trees.
We'll water him first, boys, then we'll pen him.
They hazed the horses down to the river and let them spread out to drink. Huey gave them all the time they wanted. He saw the man at the fire saddle his blue roan horse and ride up to the pens to throw the gate open. It was less than 100 yards, and it took him longer to saddle up than it would have taken to walk the distance. That told Huey he was a cowboy, not some town dweller casually passing through. He saw something familiar in the way the man sat on his roan as Huey and Cotton and Tommy pushed the freshly broken Bronx up to the pens. When the rider moved in to help them, Huey knew.
Well, I swan, Snort Yarnell! You got-eared old mule!
Snort did have a little wilt in the upper edge of his left ear. Depending upon when he told the story and to whom, it had been acquired either from a horse or from a saloon fight.
Howdy, Huey Calloway! What you doing in God's country?
Well, trying to get across before God sees me.
Snort Yarnell was a legend over Texas and half of New Mexico. When people talked of great cowmen, they spoke of Charles Goodnight and Shanghai Pierce. When they talked of cow country bankers, they might bring up the names of George W. Littlefield or Charles Schreiner. But when the conversation turned to bronc stompers and wild, reckless cowboys who knew not fear nor hesitation, they were likely to speak of men like Booger Red Privet and Snort Yarnell. Snort, it was often said, could ride more broncs, heal more calves, and drink more whiskey, separately or intermixed, than anybody who ever trailed longhorn cattle out of the South Texas brush. He was always the envy of other cowboys, and occasionally the dread of county sheriffs, city constables, and lone bartenders who had big, breakable mirrors. Snort sported a full gold tooth in the middle of his broad grin, installed by some show-off dentist during one of Snort's rare moments of temporary prosperity. Standing next to it, like a kid brother, was a gold cap, filling out a tooth that had been only half broken off. Snort's nose was nearly flat and a little askew, a mark of the bad moments that inevitably arose to one in the bronc stomper trade.
Huey, I know you don't own them horses legal, so where'd you steal them at?
Huey explained that he was delivering them to San Angelo for Alvin Laudermilk.
Now, ain't that a stroke of good luck for you? I'm heading for Angelo myself. Going to slip up on the boys' blind side and win the money at the big steer roping.
Huey's pulse quickened.
I never heard about no roping.
The day after tomorrow, you ought to get in on it. I'm figuring on taking first place, naturally, but you're welcome to second prize.
Huey shut one eye and narrowed the other.
The day I couldn't beat you with the rope was the day I was laid up with my right arm broke.
Snort turned to Cotton and Tommy.
You're Walter's boys, ain't you? Your Uncle Huey is a notorious liar. But in spite of all that, he's the second best cowboy in this whole neck of the woods, me being number one. Your old daddy was no slouch in his own time. I'd have ranked him number three before he'd taken himself to the plow.
The boys stood slack-jawed. They had seen Snort Yarnell before, but he was ever a wonder to them. Huey got down, shut the gate on the Bronx, and tied it securely. He wouldn't have trusted that Mustang Bay not to open it. He would have liked to have brought some corn or oats for the Bronx, but he let them graze enough through the day to carry them through.
Let's take our horses and let them at the grass, boys. Snort, what you got down yonder that we can graze?
3 cold biscuits and a can full of coffee. I was hoping some pilgrim like you would happen along and take pity. Don't tell me you ain't got nothing.
Huey let his disappointment show.
Well, some jerked beef, which is the next best thing to nothing. Half a slab of bacon. We'll have to cook that.
I can wait. If you need more firewood, there's plenty down yonder. All you have to do is go and fetch it.
The best that could be said for the supper was that it was filling. Huey didn't eat much. He left most of his for the boys, because he could remember how painful hunger had been to him when he was that age. Nowadays, it was no stranger to him. He took it in stride. He made up the difference with black coffee, boiled strong enough and thick enough to pass for blackstrap molasses.
Now, boys, you're probably wondering what a top hand, namely me,
Snort did the major part of the talking. Tommy hung on every word, his eyes wide and credulous. Snort didn't have to embellish much. In his case, even the truth strained belief. After telling about having his leg crushed in a horse fall, he pulled up his pants leg for proof. The scarred and crooked leg was an awesome thing to behold.
Them San Antonio doctors said it had taken an infection, and there wasn't nothing I could do but let them saw it off if I wanted to live. But I told them the good Lord had sent me into this world on two good legs, and I wasn't going to shortchange them when I turned them back in. I had some friends take me out to a little adobe house on Salado Creek. I packed this old leg in horse manure and wrapped it up tight with gunny sacks. I smelt like I was 3 weeks dead. I lost most of my friends for a while. When I left that place, I left there walking.
They've made a lot of progress. I'll bet nowadays they could do you a lot better job.
Snort slapped the leg smartly.
You couldn't ask for nothing sounder than that.
After Huey sent the boys to their blankets, he sat up a while with Snort. Mostly they hunched in thoughtful silence, smoking and thinking. Spring Renfro kept coming to Huey's mind unbidden. He tried to shut her out by dwelling on other times, other people.
Snort, I heard you was with old Grady Welch when he got killed.
Snort's face saddened as he stared into the remnant of the fire.
I was there when he'd taken his last breath on this earth. I cried like a baby.
Huey nodded, for he could understand that.
Every time we lose one like him, a little flavor goes out of life. There ain't many of us left.
Horse stepped on him, Walter said.
Big black horse it was. 16 hands high, 4 stocking feet. I never did trust a horse with 4 stocking feet.
Tough way to die.
Maybe. I don't know, but what it's the way old Grady would have wanted to go, though. Beats hell out of living till you get so old you can't ride anymore. Or getting bad hurt. Most ranches don't feel responsible for you if you get crippled for life working for them. They'll thank you for your help, give you a little folding money, and send you to town to fend for yourself. If you're damn lucky, you might get a job cooking for a wagon. If you're lucky but not that lucky, you might get a job washing out spittoons in some saloon. If you're not lucky at all, you'll wind up begging for handouts on a street corner and telling everybody how great a cowpuncher you was before you fell on hard times. I've seen all three. I'd rather it happen to me like it happened to Grady when my time comes.
Huey frowned deeply, staring into the fire, remembering grand old times with Grady and Snort, and with others who had gone on.
When we get to town, we'll have a drink to old Grady.
Snort looked up, struck by the appropriateness of the idea. It was, in its own way, almost a form of prayer.
We'll do that, Huey. We'll sure as hell do that.
They delivered the horses to Nasworthy's stables across from the huge courthouse. There, buyer Norton Bates waited with a couple of Mexican cowboys to pick them up. Bates rode with Huey to the First National Bank, a block east. It was a brand new structure with 4 magnificent white columns and a stone eagle perched on top.
You wouldn't believe it, but they spent $25,000 putting up that building.
A man could buy a good-sized ranch for that kind of money. They could have lost CC's Upton City Bank in a corner of this one and not found it for a week. Bates drew a draft and arranged for the bank to mail it directly to the Upton City Bank for Alvin's account. Huey knew nothing about the handling of such big financial transactions. His $20 or $25 or $30 a month had always been paid in cold cash.
I owe you boys a drink. The Arclight Saloon is down yonder a ways.
These youngins are might underage. They've been wanting to visit a real ice cream parlor. Reckon you could point the way to one of those?
Oh, now you know, boys. Ice cream is dangerous. Freezes the stomach. But if you're bound and determined to risk your lives, well, I'll pay for the spread.